Yeah. All right. Well, my friends, we got to get in as much Gemara as we can. I think you guys received my email I sent like 2 hours ago. And if you didn't, you should read it. I just sent you a full schedule of all the various changes that are coming up. So next week, Monday night, God willing, at 7, we'll be doing Gemara because there's an Isser to learn on Tisha B'Av. Right? You're not supposed to do Talmud Torah on Tisha B'Av. And God knows I'm not up for teaching a class right after Tisha B'Av. You guys might be up for it, but I have to apologize. I might not be up for it. So we're going to do Monday night next week. And then I don't think it's viable. We're going to be in Eretz Yisrael for a little while. I don't think it's viable that I'm going to be able to teach the Gemara Shir from Eretz Yisrael with an hour difference and who knows where I'll be on what night. So we might be on a brief hiatus, but we'll get back to it as soon as we can. Okay.
You're going to
Are you
Israel?
taking a pilgrimage to Israel?
Pilgrimage. I'm visiting my parents, right, Zadie?
Yes. Give my regards to your parents.
We'll have a status of a shliach. We say shlucho shadim kamoso.
Yeah.
We're gonna have
And tell Amy she's my favoriteest daughter.
Will do. Will do. For those who don't know, my mother's his only daughter. So, okay, but also the favorite. All right, we find ourselves in Aleph Amud Beis. So, just to understand, we're picking up in the middle of a sugya. So, a little bit of a reminder of where we stand. There is a debate between Rav and Shmuel. Rav said, right, what happens is, let's say I have branches that are attached to a tree. We know that the branches need to be detached from the tree in order to be kosher schach. So what do you do? Well, I already cut
Out,
over.
cutting out.
I don't know. I have full bars here. But where was it? The Gemara. So the Gemara says that if you put branches over the sukkah and you detach it, so according to Rav, all you need to do is tzitzasan zohiasiyasan. Important phrase to remember. Or if you just hear me say a bunch of Hebrew words in a row, just assume this is what I'm saying, probably. Tzitzatzon zohi asiyasa, an important phrase for this entire Gemara, means cutting it is as if you're doing it, meaning it's sufficient for you just to snip, and you don't no further action required. That's Rav Shita. According to Shmuel, it's not sufficient. We have a principle we'll talk about called ta'asev elo min ha'asoy. Phrase, I guess, which means that at the time when you put the schach down on the sukkah, it needs to be kosher at that point. It needs to be a kosher sukkah. You can't put down pasul schach and then snip it. Rather, Shmuel says you have to do something else. You have to be menaneh. You have to we push it up and down, shake it around a little bit, and we talked about last week why how that helps. So picking up on this debate, we expanded the machlokas of Rav and Shmuel not only to when it comes to a sukkah, but also to Hilchos Tzitzis. What happens if I take the strings of the Tzitzis and they're not yet cut, but I weave them through and all that, and I tie them already, and all I need to do, all that's left is I just need to cut the Rosheihem. I need to cut just the heads of them. So according to Rav, that's all you gotta do. See, cousin Zoasiyasan, cutting it renders it kosher. According to Shmuel, that's not going to work. You'll need to redo the whole thing and retie it all together. So I realized I may have misexplained. I was losing my voice and I was like losing my concentration at the end last time. I may have not explained clearly that very last line in the Gemara. I'm just going to throw it out there for what it's worth, and then we'll get to today's Gemara. The last line on top of the Avin Beis, it said that we had a Havamina, Bina Knapashas Psil Vileka Kamashmalan. There was a Havamina that if I take the strings of the tzitzis and I weave them through two corners at the same time and then cut it and tie it, it would not be kosher because you tied it through two corners at the same time. Kamashmalan, the Gemara teaches us, according to Shmuel, it's fine anyway. All right, if you got that, fine. If not, I'm just setting records straight, just putting that on the side. Now, picking up, we're all the way on the top, all the way on the top, last word on the first line, Mesve. We're going to challenge Rav's position. If you already tied the tzitzis in, you wove it, you tied them, you made all the knots, all the different things you got to do, all the bells and whistles. However, you still need to actually snip the string so that they're all separate individual strings. So then, psulin. So then it will be pasul. So this would seem to be a question, a challenge against Rav, because the Gemara, this Bryce is telling us that if you snip the Rosh Echutin, you snip the ends of the string, it will still be possible anyway, which is against Rav. It says all you need to do is snip the strings and it will be okay. So Rav, what would Rav tell us? What would he do to defend himself against this Bryce? My psulin, what's it mean when the Bryce said that such a scenario that tzitzis will be puzzle? Psulin ache yifsiku, just means it's puzzle until you take the next step and then you cut it and render it kosher. So that's what Rav would say. But Shmuel amar psulin olam. But Shmuel, of course, who debates Rav on this matter, would say no. It means psul la'olam. If at the time that you tied it, they were not separate strings, too bad. It's not kosher. And you got to redo the whole thing. And now just here's a list of people who concurred with Shmuel. V'chino are levi psul la'olam. V'chino are ramasta. Amar Shmuel psul la'olam. Igin amri amar ramasta. V'di have uka. I'm saying that Ramasta said, I had such a situation. But also the kamei demar Shmuel v'akul psul la'olam. I came before Shmuel and he told me that is possible. The slight difference is that maybe Rav Masna himself didn't espouse that position, but he went to Shmuel and he just reporting to Shmuel Paskin that it would be possible for him. Okay, so Rav has successfully sort of by proxy defended himself against one challenge from a Braisa. But can he withstand the second challenge? We'll find out. This is slightly different. You tie the tzitzit on, but after, only afterwards, you snipped it and rendered it separate strings. Psulin, it will still be possible. Oof, this might be the nail in the coffin for Rav, possibly. Because here, Rav can't say, what's mean possible? Possible until you cut it. Here it's saying, you already cut it, and it's still possible anyway, which would seem to contradict Rav's position. But before we get to the conclusion of the matter, not only do we have a question from this Braisa, but we have a question from another Braisa, which elaborates on something from our Mishnah. But Otani Kavik Sukka, Taset Velo Min HaAsoy. So as we said, what's the word Tasa mean? Tasa means you have to make it kosher at that moment. You can't just have Puzzle Skach and then build, or have Skach and then build the walls around it. It needs to be kosher at the time of the creation. Mikan Amru, this may sound familiar. If you put vines, gourds, ivy on top of the sukkah, and he put some skach on top as well, sula will be puzzled because the majority is from non-kosher skach that's attached to the ground. Oh, so what is this Bryce teaching me? What's the Bryce trying to teach me I would not know otherwise? If the issue here is that the scenario is that the vines are still attached to the ground, why do I need to bring in this whole new idea called Tasa Lumina Asoy? It's straight up puzzle because it's Mechubar Lekarka. It's attached to the ground. So long as it's attached to the ground, it's puzzle. So Ella, what's the scenario that Bryce is addressing? It's when you actually did sever its connection to the ground. Ukatai Psula, and it's teaching us puzzle anyway. And that teaches me Shmanina to That means that we don't say it's sufficient for you just to snip it. And this would be a challenge against Rav, because Rav would say, no, it'd be kosher if you snip it. What Rav responds? Rav says, no. Where is Bryce? We can still read it that it accords with my position. How so? Rav would say, what's the issue here? Of course, if you decide to go ahead and you decide to cut the vine separate from the ground, it'll be kosher. It's just the sages, the Chachamim, were concerned that so long as the vines still look like they are part of the tree, right? You know, you have to like look very closely and magically. It's like, oh yeah, I see that's cut, it's severed. But to the onlooker, it's still mixed together with the rest of the tree. You didn't go out of your way to separate it. If so, that's what they're concerned about. But Rav would say this brisa can still hold kitzitzatz and zoyatziatza. They can still say severing is enough. However, even though Rav might be able to reread this brisa in a way that accords with Mikol Makom Tzulav Achar Pasach, the initial second brisa, the initial one in this challenge that we brought, that says that if you tie the tzitzis and afterwards sever them, it will still remain puzzle anyway. Kasha Rav Kasha. That is an absolute question against Rav. We don't have an answer because there it says black on white explicitly that if you tie tzitzis and even after you sever them and make them severed strings, it'll still be puzzle anyway. Got to throw up our hands and defeat. We have to wave the white flag over here. This is an explicit brisa against Rav, it would seem. At least that's what the Gemara says. Kasha Rav Kasha. Okay. Let me take a breath of fresh air. Any questions on this point? Okay, so just to summarize, we had two main challenges against Rav, or really three if you're counting that way. And in the end, it would seem that Rav was able to defend himself against two out of three, but one of them was just too powerful and he couldn't protect himself. We're done. Now, this is something that the Gemara does all the time. Here we have Machlokes Rav and Shmuel, but perhaps this debate between Rav and Shmuel could actually be attributed to a debate from Tanayim, from an earlier generation. And meaning that fundamentally, this whole debate about tzitzasan, zoyasiyasan or not, do we say that severing is sufficient to render something kosher? Maybe this debate is actually not, you know, this is what happens all the time. You know, some rabbi articulates an idea, but really, like, it's not their chiddush. Some rabbi a few years earlier already articulated it. Just everyone forgot that they said that. So really, this debate, the heart of it might actually be a Tanaitic debate. How so? The following case, we'll deal with, I think it comes up later in the Gemara as well. Yes, it comes up on Lame Gimelmanav on 33a. We have a little time till we get there, so we'll just whet your appetite with this reference. So the Gemara is talking about how to have kosher hadasim for your arba minim. So for hadasim, the issue is they could grow these, for lack of a better term, these berries on them. And if there's too many of them, then it will render it pasul. So what do? Generally, before Yom Tov, if you pick them off, you would be fine. But the issue is that if you pick them off on Yom Tov, you might have a problem. If you went ahead and you took the berries off after it already together with the Avaminim, so then it would still be possible. They were Rabbi Bar Yotza. No, even if you're not supposed to pick berries off of it on Yom Tov, you're not supposed to do that. If you did it anyway, accidentally, you'll have kosher adas in the end of the day. So what's behind this debate? What's what we call the Shor Shemachlokis? Savrua, the one suggestion is, so they hold that a luv needs an egged. So, right, there's a bit of discussion what exactly an egged is. It's not just a bus company. But an egged is, think about the holder you have. The holder really counts toward that. That you put the luv, the hadas, and the aravos in, right? So the issue is that do you have to take the hadas when at the time of binding them together? Maybe the hadasin, the lulav, and the aravos all need to be kosher at that point. So the question is, can the hadasin, once they're bound together, but they're a puzzle at that point, is enough to render them kosher simply by picking off the berries? Sounds a little familiar, right? So for the lulav, sorry, I have a goal that you need to have the lulav, those three, bound together. And we also hope that we extract, we copy and paste the laws, the parameters of a kosher sukkah to determining the parameters of a kosher lula. Right? So we already established. Sukkah has the idea, tassel and asoy. At the time of putting it together, it needs to be kosher. So my that background, what is the base of this argument over whether picking off the berries of your hadassim on yantiv would render kosher? The mashes of our arena gabi sukkah. So the first opinion is in accordance with Rav, who says as long as you cut off or pick off or whatever you're doing, it's going to be kosher. However, And the one who says to take off the berries once it's bound together will still, you'll still have a puzzle arbaminem. So he is in accordance, or rather Shmuel is in accordance with him, that he holds that that tearing off, severing is not sufficient to render it kosher. Therefore, when it comes to lulav as well, we extrapolate from sukkah that also it would not be sufficient just to take the berries off, but at the time of binding, it would need to be kosher. Is that a question, John? Or?
Rabbi, the sound quality is not good, particularly when you're looking down. I don't know if anybody else is experiencing it either.
Aye. Okay.
I know you have to look down to read.
let me see. There's something I can do over here.
Maybe adjusting the location of the microphone.
Just in the last couple of minutes.
Oh man, how much should I rewind over here, guys?
Every other paragraph.
No, I think you're okay.
Do you hear me better now?
If you just get it better, then we'll be all right.
Okay, the laptop looks like this. Okay. All right, maybe I'll have to schlep the microphone back with me. I'll figure this out. Okay, but if at any point it gets too bad, let me know again. I'll try to speak up. I'll read and I'll speak up. Okay, I'll try to figure this out. Okay. So as of now, you hear me? Okay. As of now, we want to suggest that this machlokis tanoim, this machlokis about whether taking the berries off is sufficient to make the entire, when I say lulav, I mean the entire together, as we colloquially call lulav, kosher. But, and so it would seem to be analogous to the debate when it comes to sukkah, it's enough to sever the skach to render it kosher. However, some would say, lo, dukuliyama lo amrina gavi sukkah except the yasan. This machlokis tanayim, this tanayinic debate, is not necessarily the same one that Rav Shmuel are disagreeing with. Because there could be a different reason why they're arguing whether taking the berries off makes it kosher or not. What could be the basis of their debate? So maybe the kuliyama, lo amrina gavi sukkah, kitzotzen zoes yasin. Maybe everybody agrees when it comes to sukkah, they hold like Shmuel, it's not sufficient to just sever the vines. But what are they arguing about? They're arguing about, is it even reasonable to extrapolate the parameters of what makes a sukkah kosher and infer from there the parameters of what makes a lulav kosher? The man de machsher sever lo yalpina lulav misukkah, uman de puzzle sever yalpina lulav misukkah. So one who says that picking the berries off is not enough is because he infers that from sukkah. However, one who says that it's kosher says, we don't infer from sukkah. And therefore, if you take the berries off, it's fine. We don't have an idea of pasav lo min ha'asoy when it comes to the lulav. So that's a second suggestion on how to understand this machlokis tanayim. Okay? Suggestion number three. The ibaizema. And this will be the final one. E vira long du lulav tzarek egen. Do we hold, maybe, we've been assuming this whole time, that a lulav needs to be bound together in order for it to be kosher. Maybe not. Just says, take arba minim. You know, the same way I hold an esrog in a separate hand from my rest of my gimel minim. So who says the other minim need to be bound together? So maybe the whole debate is Yisrael and Dulav Tzarek Eged, whether I need an Eged altogether. Right? So everyone holds that we could derive the parameters of a kosher sukkah from avlua from sukkah. Bahaka bahaka mifligi. And this is their argument. Mar savar tzarek Eged, umar savar ain't tzarek Eged. Their debate is simply, does a lulav require an Eged? And in fact, if that is in truth their debate, then their debate is already found in another machlokis tanan. So we're going deeper down the rabbit hole. The Tanya, lulav bein agud bein she'eno agud kosher. It's one opinion, the Brisa, is that if you decide to bind your lulav or you don't bind your lulav, it's kosher anyway. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, no, agud
kosher, shekino, good puzzle. No, it's indispensable. It needs to be bound together. Otherwise, it is a non-kosher lua. You could have gotten the most beautiful set. You could have paid for, you know, the mahadrim, mahadrim with all the yidurim, even though it's more for the esrog people do it for. But, you know, you could have, like, taken that lulav, you looked at it like a rifle, you went down the spine, you made sure that it was nicely closed and everything. Doesn't matter. If you don't bind it together, it's not kosher, according to Rabbi Yehuda.
Can I ask a quick question?
Yeah.
Are we talking about the binding of the lulav or the whole three together?
The whole three. Yeah, that's why I try to say, like, when we say lulav, you mean colloquially, you know, what we call the lulav. But, yeah, it means the binding of all three together. Yeah. Thank you for having me clarify that. That's important. So my time with Rabbi Yehuda, where does Rabbi Yehuda get the idea that you need to bind the lulav, everything together? Yalef lekicha lekicha me'agudas eso is gezeira shava, right? Gezeira shava. If you have two words that appear in two different places, it creates a wormhole that connects both of them together, that we could transfer dinim, we could transfer laws from one to the other. So what do we have here? So agudas ezo. So if you look in the pasuk over, well, actually, it's about to quote the pasuk. Siv hasam lekachtem agudas ezo. So I believe this is in the context of Yitzias Mitzrayim, Ryan Shemos. It says that you should take agudas ezo in order to put the blood on the doorpost. So notice he used the word aguda, right? An eket, a binding, right? That's also like agudas shalom, right? We're bound together. It's all the same. It's all the same word. Okay. I was about to say agudas yisrael, but I'm like, I could say arshul, yudashon, same thing. So uksiv hachan, here it says ulakachem lechem biyom harisho. So we see that it uses the same language of lekicha, of taking. So ma lahalam ba'aguda avkanami ba'aguda. Just like for agudas ezo, it needs to be bound together. So too, when it comes to lulav, also it needs to be taken when it's bound together. So what did Rabbanan do with this gezeira shava? How do they ignore it? The answer is they ignore it. Lekicha milekicha lo yafinam. They do not have a mesorah. They don't have a tradition for such a gezeira shava. Now, if you glance very briefly at Tosfos, Dibor Maskel lekicha lekicha lo yafinam. Tosis points something out that's very important. Anyone here learn Maseches Kiddushin before? Okay. So here's I don't want to say famous because it's famous to some people, not to others. But it's a very important Gezeir Shava that comes up at the beginning of the Masech called Kicha Kicha Mistei Ephron. One of the ways one could betroth a woman is through Kesef, is through giving money. How do we know that that is a viable means of acquisition? So we know for the Maris HaMachpelah, Avram had to pay with cash. Right? We had that whole entire thing, like with Thenardier. It's kind of like in Les Mis. Ephraim was like very tricky with him. But the point there is that there was a lashon of taking over there, and there's also a lashon of kicha of a man takes a woman. So we learned dinim there. So the question is, so Tosus asks, so we do see that there is on the books such a gezeir shava of taking, kicha, kicha. What's the difference over here? Got to fetch it a little bit. What's the difference here? It's not kicha, kicha, it's likicha, likicha with a lamed. So that kicha, kicha, we have such a gezeir shava, likicha, likicha, we don't have that. The question occurred to me, and I was glad to see Tosos addressed it. The answer is Tosos thought it was good. Who am I to say otherwise? Right? Okay. Judd, is everything fine? You could hear?
The volume is, the sound is great. That's not why I'm interrupting. I have a question on a gezeira shava.
Yeah.
Doesn't it all depend on which pasuk we take to be the primary? How does that work in terms of?
I don't know if it has to be that way. So we're going to see later on, we're going to have a drasha as well of Tesvav, that there's laws that we transfer between the first night of Sukkot and the first night of Pesach. It's been a while, but we'll get to it. I think it's in the second parak, if I remember correctly. And I think it could actually go both ways, right? So I use the analogy of a wormhole, right? So according to some, you know, the black hole goes in, goes through a wormhole, and then goes out a white hole, and only goes in one direction. So that maybe the mushel I used was the wrong mushel, but I believe in Gezeirah Shavah it could go both ways. I'm just not thinking of a good example right now. That's all. Yeah. We'll have to get an example of that, but I think it could go both ways. All right. So let's finish up the Gemara now. So the Gemara says, "Kaman Ozla Haditanya Lulav Mitzvah La'Ogdo." The issue is that it seems to be one or the other. Either you need to have an Eged, or you don't need an Eged. There's no point in having one. The issue is that we have a Brisa, which subscribes to an intermediary position. An intermediate position, and what's it say? It says that there is a mitzvah to, meaning, what do we mean by mitzvah? It's like the way we colloquially use the term mitzvah. It's a good thing. Ideally, you should put an eged on your lulav. V'imlo'av do kosher, but if you don't do it, it's kosher anyway. So, I Rabbi Yehuda, k'il go amai kosher. According to Rabbi Yehuda, who says it's indispensable, why would it be kosher? This brisa can't be in accordance with Rabbi Yehuda. And I Rabbanan, my mitzvah. And according to Rabbanan, who say you don't need an eged, why would it be a mitzvah in the first place to put an eged on it? So the Olam Rabbanan, he, in truth, this accords with the Rabbanan. And Mishum Shenemar, very important principle, Zekhi Levan Behu. It's not the fun of the mitzvahs. That is a principle called Zekhi Levan Behu that we're supposed to glorify and beautify the mitzvahs that we do with that we perform for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the Rabbanan say, in truth, you don't need to bind your lulav, but there's an imperative, ideally, to do so because we're supposed to beautify all the mitzvahs that we do. Now, just a brief elaboration on this idea of Zekeh Levan Behu. So I bring to you tonight, turning back to our good friend Rav Soloveitchik, as distilled in the Rishimos Shiurim. Rav Soloveitchik, so this is Rabbi Reichman, who is a student of Rav Soloveitchik, distilling Rav Soloveitchik Shiurim, and Rav Soloveitchik is distilling his grandfather, Reb Chaim. So we have like a Kli Shlishi over here. But hopefully, I'm sure it's all conveyed accurately. Reb Chaim says that, unsurprisingly, there's two categories of what we call Zekeh Levan Behu. There's a general overarching principle in Kol HaTorah Kula that anytime you want to do a mitzvah, you should do it in the most beautiful way possible. But then, and that applies to, you know, I'm not going to say all 613 mitzvahs, but it applies to many of the mitzvahs throughout the Torah. We should try to do things in the most aesthetically pleasing way possible. It brings more glory to God. But then there's certain mitzvahs that Zekeh Levan Behu actually affects the inherent parameters of that mitzvah. And the example Reb Chaim gives is with a bris milah. The halacha is that kol zman she'osik b'milah, let's say you're doing a bris milah on Shabbos. So we know that doing a bris milah supersedes Shabbos. But what if, you know, you did the bris milah and there's some, for lack of a better term, extraneous matter that it would be nicer if there wasn't, you know, some skin hanging here and there, and the moa wants to clean up and do things the right way, do things in a clean, nice way. So the halacha is that so long as he's still involved in the general act of the bris milah, kozer b'shabbos al tzitzin she'ena ma'akvin, he could go back even on Shabbos and get the extraneous matter off. However, if he stopped the bris and some point later wants to come back and wants to clean up, you would not be able to do it. Why? Because so long as he's involved in the bris, there's a Zekeh Levan Behu, which modifies the parameters here, that within the mitzvah of performing a bris milah, there's also one detail in there is that it should be done in an aesthetically proper manner. Zekeh Levan Behu. However, if the action of the bris is done
and then later on he wants to go back on Shabbos and clean up, or even, you know, especially even next Shabbos he wants to go back and clean up. So that he can't do, because then it's not operating as a sub action within the mitzvah of Bris Milah that supersedes Shabbos, but then it's just a kiyum, it's just a fulfillment of Zekei Vavehu on a general level. The general notion of beautifying mitzvos and doing that does not supersede Shabbos, just like most mitzvos don't supersede Shabbos. So what's interesting here is about the Eged, is how do we understand the Eged on the Lulav? So the Eged on the Lulav, do we understand just as a mitzvah ba'alma? It's a nice thing in Kol HaTorah Kula that just, you know, you have a Lulav, you get a nice Lulav case for it, and you get all these, you know, bells and whistles that enhance the experience. Is that a general idea of Kol Torah Kula? Or there can be Zekei Vavehu that it actually modifies the mitzvah itself. So much so that I need, like according to Rabbi Huda, it's indispensable. I need to have an Eged. And in fact, the Mordechai paskins that not only do you need Eged, but if you tie it together, it needs to be what we call a kesher shel kayama. It needs to be, so what's a kesher shel kayama? It means like a knot that will last. That you may have heard that phrase in Hilchos Shabbos. When we have the question of, can you double knot your laces on Shabbos? So the issue is that if you make what's called a kesher shel kayama, a knot that's really going to stay no matter where you pull, you know, the idea of making one knot, it's a slip knot, you can pull it out. Maybe that's not considered kesher shel kayama. But a kesher shel kayama is saying it's going to last well. So there's a question about double knotting your laces on Shabbos. So the Mordechai says that the eged you put on your lulav needs to be a kesher shel kayama. Now, if the idea was just to generally beautify the lulav, it looks nice, that's bound together, why would I need a kesher shel kayama? But if it's something that's inherent within the parameters of Hilchos lulav, so then it can modify to the extent that I need to have a kesher shel kayama. So that's there's a little bit more to the piece, but that's Rav Soloveitchik's point. Now, the interesting thing that he quotes from his father, Moshe Soloveitchik, is, wait, I don't get it. If there is this idea of Zek Kelivan Vehu in Kol HaTorah Kula, that's its own separate mitzvah, why is it when the Rambam counts all 613 mitzvahs, there's no separate mitzvah called Zek Kelivan Vehu? It's a good question, right? One can answer that sometimes certain overarching principles Rambam doesn't count as mitzvos. That was, I think, Rav Cook's answer for why Rambam didn't count that as a mitzvah to move to Eretz Yisrael. It's such an overarching principle that so many mitzvos, hatzlius bars, are contingent on living in Israel. It's a presupposition that you're already there. Okay, so that's a mythological point. All right. Let's finish up the Gemara. All right, so coming back to the Mishnah told us that there are two things that you need in order to have kosher schach. Number one, it can't be susceptible to tumah, can't be makabel tumah. Number two, it can't be attached to the ground. So where do we get this idea? Where do we get this idea that we need these two criteria? Zeha klal, kol dor shemakabel tumah. Okay, mina hani mili, where do we get this idea from? Amrei shlach shemar kra. It said, v'eid yala min ha'aretz, a mist emerge from the earth. This is in Bereishis, in the creation story. So we see that it emerged from the earth. Now we know that mist is not something that's susceptible to becoming tameh. How do we know? Rashi, Dibur Masla Imakabal Tuma Lisra says, what is susceptible to becoming tameh? Kalim, vessels and implements, food, certain kinds of liquids, and people. And since this mist that emerged from the earth is not one of them, apparently doesn't qualify for mashkin, so therefore we see that it's not susceptible to tumah. Now you might be wondering, what the heck does mist have to do with schach? Well, why am I learning from mist? So we do mina aretz, and we see it emerged from the earth. So afsuka darshim makabel tumah gedum mina aretz. Okay. But Hanich Lama de Omar Anane Kavanai. So there is a big debate about when we sit in a sukkah on sukkahs, what are we commemorating? Are we commemorating literal sukkahs that we sat in? Or are we commemorating the Anane HaKavod? It's as if we're within the clouds of glory that God used to protect us. And I'm sure you've heard many rabbi sermons based on this.
So Hanichla Laman Damar Nani Kavod Hayu. It makes sense why we're learning from this cloud, this mist that came up in the creation story, because we're trying to emulate what it's like to be in a cloud. But at the point of the sukkah is to commemorate literal sukkahs, literal huts. How are we deriving any kind of parameters and details from this mist in the creation story, from this cloud? To make lemeimar, and here's the bright sort of debate comes up. The Tanakh, as soon as the Shadis ben Israel, that God caused us to settle in sukkos. So Anane Kavod Hayu, Divrei Rabbi Eliezer. Eliezer says that these are clouds. Rabbi Akiva Omer, sukkos in Ma'an Shotzlan, that God made literal sukkos for them. So Anichal, Rabbi Eliezer, this all fits nicely when Rabbi Eliezer says that it's to commemorate the Anane Akavod, the clouds of glory. Rabbi Akiva, Ma'ik Lameimar, Rabbi Akiva, that they're literal sukkos. Where do we get this idea again of the parameters that kosher schach is from something that's not makabel tuma, and also is that grows from the ground but is no longer attached to the ground? So where do we get this from? So ki asa Rav Dimi Amar Rav Yochanan Amar Kra, we get it from this. It says in the Torah, Chag Hasukos Tasukha. It says that you should make chag. So you see, there's a juxtaposition word chag, term chag. When we call something a chag, you know, it's technically inaccurate. When we call something like Purim a chag, like there's no carbon chagiga that you bring on Purim. There's no carbon chagiga you bring on Yom HaAtzmaut, right? So these don't have a status of a chag, really. So what's really it? What's a chag? A chag is something you bring a chagiga. So with this juxtaposition, we see makish sukkah lechagiga. We see that a sukkah is supposed to, so we've talked about gezeir shavas, creating a wormhole between two different sukkah. A hekich is just you have a juxtaposition of two things right next to each other. So the juxtaposition of chag and sukkah teaches us that we can infer certain ideas from the karma chagiga to the laws of sukkah. Ma chagiga darshin makabel tuma gido min haaretz, just as the karma chagiga, the animal, is not, animals are not susceptible to becoming tame, and it grows from the ground. I said, what animals grow from the ground? What are you talking about? So Rashi says, in this Havamina here, we don't actually conclude this way, but in the Havamina, Rashi says, Shemin HaKarka Gedim V'Nizone, that according to Rav Yochanan, they get their sustenance from the ground. Unlike fish and I think he mentioned, right, mushrooms and different things here. So they get from the moisture. Animals in this Havamina, they get their sustenance from the ground. So according to this point in the Gemara, we're accepting the fact that that's called Gidule Karka. So we infer from there, just like the carbon is not susceptible to tuma and it grows from the ground, so to a sukkah as well, the schach cannot be susceptible to tuma, and it's supposed to grow from the ground. But I got one question for you, the Gemara says. So according to this, I should be able, instead of having to get a bamboo mat for my sukkah, which we already mentioned has possible issues, I should be able to, you know what some people do, like when they get a talus bag, they don't want just a regular felt talus bag or a knit one. They want to have like made out of cow skin, or, you know, like they'll have like the fur talus. I don't know if you guys have ever seen that. So maybe, you know, this will be the next new thing in like the Five Towns or somewhere. You'll have like the fur leather schach on top of your sukkah. I'm not going with the pauper's, bamboo. I'm going to put like the leather covering on my sukkah. But that's not done. And there was no tradition for doing that. Clearly we know that's not kosher. So there's something inherently faulty with trying to use an animal as the paradigm for what is kosher schach. So the Gemara will leave off at this point. The Gemara rejects this limud. We're going to have, I think, two other suggestions coming up next week on Yud Beis Amin Aleph. So God willing, we'll pick it up with this on Monday night, 7:00. So wonderful learning together with all of you. And any questions before I finish? Okay. And wishing you all a wonderful Shabbos. Take care.
Yeah.
Good job.
Were you guys able to hear me at least for
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I just need to project.
Clear.
Okay, very good. All right,
thank you. Bye.